Book lovers in Bakersfield, Farah and Jeff, and here today. Welcome to our 25th episode. Can you believe it, Jasmine? 25 episodes already.
No, I honestly can't believe it. I keep looking back at the weeks passing by, and I've just been rather surprised that much time has passed, honestly.
But today we have our special guest, Allison, here, and this is her second time on our show, so I'm really glad to have her back. Hi, Allison.
Hi, thank you so much. Thank you, Farah. Thank you, Jasmine, for having me back. It's exciting. I can't believe it. I know. I can't believe it's been that long. But I'm very honored to be part of the 25th, so that's amazing.
Yeah, it is really amazing. I can't believe how much 2020 has passed. We are looking at we're in that final portion of it. So we're finished, the finish line is in sight for 2020. Now it's going to be 2021, and I'm sure we're going to all be bashing that year too.
Yeah, exactly. When I put out the candy corn and put the like Halloween and fall decorations up, I was like, wow, it really is. It's so crazy. But
yeah, I haven't even thought about fall that hard. I have a kid, so I should be thinking about it a little harder, but I haven't thought about Halloween yet.
I think mine is willing it to come so that the year passes.
I'm willing it to come, see? I've been wearing all my cardigans and trying to stay all warm and cozy, even though it's like 90 degrees outside.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like fall weather yet. And nothing's like, my tree in front of my house has, fall leaves normally, but it hasn't gotten there yet. It's all green still. So maybe in the next couple of weeks, it'll start to change. We'll see. Right?
But we don't really get fall in Bakersfield. Yeah.
So. No, I was gonna say, Bakersfield fall. This is like what it is, right?
For 2 weeks.
It's a week. It's the week where all the leaves fall off and then it's done. And then it's winter.
Well, I think it's partially because we just don't have a lot of those kind of trees that have fall weather in the first place. Like so much of the trees are like evergreen. Maybe I notice it more. See, I notice fall more since I moved into the house I'm in now because I do have a tree that turns orange. It hasn't happened yet. So I'm like, it's not fall yet until it turns orange.
I mean, I miss that. I'm from back east. So I miss the way the fall air there smells. Mm-hmm. Like a real crispness to the air. Mm-hmm. And I will drive down certain streets in Bakersfield that I know have those trees, Jasmine, like you're talking about, so that I can just feel like I am back east just for that drive, just to like see some sort of change in the leaves.
Feels yeah. Good.
It's definitely, it's one of those things, like the climate is actually really nice in the sense that there's not as many extremes, you know, it's kind of mm-hmm. like, you know, cold and then hot and like there's not snow, obviously, and dealing with the work that's involved with that I hear. I'm from Bakersfield, so I hear it's difficult. But yeah, it is a little sad sometimes because fall and spring, it's like they're there, but you know, they're moody. They decide when they're going to come out, and sometimes some years it's only a day, and some years you see a month of that, you know, that season. So
that's some great personification, Jasmine. They are moody. Love that.
No, but I miss the fall from the Midwest, like, you know, dressing in my boots and my flannels and my cute little vest and then going to like these corn mazes and like hay rides and then just doing like the fresh apple cider donuts and like, oh, I just miss it all.
All that stuff is so good. I've been here for like 18 years and I still buy sweaters and he's like, why?
Yeah.
What are you doing? And so when we moved, like I had just boxes of sweaters and it was like, do you really need these? Yes. Yes, I do. I really still need them.
Yeah. I remember when I was moving to Bakersfield and I was like packing all my boots and stuff. And my husband was like, you better just leave those over there. You're not going to need them here. I was like, no.
I find that the problem is always that not so much, obviously, since I'm from here, I don't have too much cold weather clothing. But the problem I always find is when I do need something, I can't find it anywhere. Like you just can't purchase it because it doesn't exist at any of the stores. So you're sitting around looking around, you're like, I really need a sweater. It happens to be a cold, February. And you're like, I really need a sweater, but nobody sells it. So you don't get a sweater. You pretty much just suffer until you get it.
Because all I'll buy is like sweaters and cardigans. And my husband's like, you don't need those. And I was like, yes, I do. I do. I need this. Like, where are you going to wear it? I'll wear it in the house.
Well, it's cold inside buildings.
Yeah.
Some buildings are like you're frozen out and you need a sweater for sure. Just having that like protection of a sweater.
Exactly. My grandparents used to visit us every like February, March to get out of the snow. Mm-hmm. And we would be here in like corduroys or jeans feeling that that was our winter. And when they would get off the plane, they put on, you know, capris and shorts. And we were like, what are you doing? It's cold. And they're like, no, you have no reference for what cold is. To them, our February, March was summer or spring or something. It was great.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine that. See, I always tell people I grew up without air conditioning. So I had a really high heat tolerance. I was really good with heat. I was really good. Like, I was always like, I'm cool up to like 90 degrees was totally fine. I felt fine with that, but I'm kind of the opposite when it comes to cold because I'm not used to it. I think the first time I ever got off a plane and it was under, it was in negative temperatures, I thought I was going to die. I was just like, oh my God, what's happening here? I can't breathe. It felt like I had like icicles in my lungs.
I'm laughing because my husband is the same way. When he came to Kansas for the first time, it was April. And he literally tried to get back on the plane. No joke. He was like, I don't want to be here. Can this flight just take me back? And I was like, no, come on. It's okay. You'll be okay.
The first time my husband, who's a Bakersfield boy, I took him back east at Christmas, and my family were big Cleveland Browns fans. So I always tell like my students that lets you know that I'm a loyal person, right? If I still follow the Browns. But we went to Cleveland in the winter on Lake Erie to watch a football game like in December. And he got out of the car from, you know, the airport, and my brother and my dad and I went like trudging in to get our pizza or whatever the night before the game. And I saw him standing like in the middle of the parking lot. I was like, what are you doing? He looked like Bambi because he had no idea how to walk on ice. It was so adorable. I was like, well, you just walk. What are you thinking? But you don't realize, but you, right, Farrah, you have that like adjustment to your.
Yeah, for sure. Because then I took him. Okay. So we went in. So he came in April. Then the next time he came, it was October. And he's like, I am done. I am never coming back. I am never coming back. He said it was so cold. And I'm over here like in short sleeves and like. And he's like, what's even the temperature right now? I was like, I don't know, 40, 32. I don't know what it is. Like, it's not cold.
And he's like, whatever.
He's like, this is
sweater on.
Yeah. He's like, I'm not coming back ever. And then I think the next time he came back, it was like summer. So he was like, it was cool. It wasn't like Bakersfield, like hot, hot summer. It was like a cool summer. So he was like, okay with that. But the next time we went, it was in January, and it wasn't snowing. It wasn't scheduled to snow, but then it snowed. And it snowed a lot. And he about just was like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not.
Yeah, I never thought about, by the way, I never thought about walking on ice now until you brought that up. It's literally never crossed my mind ever. I can't tell you, I can't figure out the idea of how you move through like the world without feeling like you're always like wet from snow constantly. And I also have never experienced like actual snowing. Like, I've seen snow on the ground. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I walked through the snow. Oh, I guess it did snow a little when I drove up to Yosemite last year, and I turned around because I slid and I was like, no, this isn't happening. I do not want anything to do with this. And it's like, you know, people romanticize snow so much, especially when it doesn't occur. So it's like, I mean, it sounds like it'd be beautiful and wonderful. And I've seen it a little. But I've also been told by people who moved to Bakersfield that they're like, no, it's a lot of work. And I've started listening to them. I'm like, it's definitely a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize, because I mean, I moved here when I was, 22. And so I had no responsibilities. It was like, cool, I'm just going to move and whatever. And then when I took little children back, I had an infant and a toddler. And I took them back to kind of see my family in the winter, and having to shove them in snowsuits. Mm-hmm. And boots, and then buckle them into car seats.
Yep.
And then thinking about having to heat up and, you know, clean off the car before I could like take them somewhere. Mm-hmm. That was like, no, too much work.
So when we went, Yeah, when we went in January, I had to do all of that to, because the baby, and she was younger at that time. She's like 17 months now, but she was younger when we went in January. And I was like, okay, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this, you know? And yeah. So I had to put like, and is she going to keep everything on? So I had to put like the hat, the gloves, she had boots, she had like her jacket. I had to buckle her in. And then my husband, no experience driving in the snow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. I'm like, you go sit in the back with the baby, take care of the baby. And I'm over here like driving in the snow, you know, being careful. And he's all like, mm-hmm. I'm like, this is as fast as the car is going to go. We're not going any faster. It's snowing.
Yeah.
No, that freaks me out. Honestly, like it freaks me out. I'm just, you know, but I know that's how people feel about fog here. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that's how people feel about fog. You know, my husband's actually from down south and then also Palmdale. And, you know, he came here for college. And when he first dealt with, like, because there was a few years there where there wasn't as much fog. It was kind of weird. There wasn't as much fog in, like, that time frame. And then all of a sudden the fog has come back and reared its head in the last, I don't know, maybe 7-6 years. And the first time he went through it, he just, oh my gosh, he looked like he was gonna have a heart attack. He was like, I can't see anything. I don't know how to drive through this. And I'm like, it's really not that bad. You just go ridiculously slow. Know that somebody's probably stopped in front of you, and know that somebody's probably going to be speeding around acting like, you know, a butt over there. It's not a big deal. You know, just go really slow and assume everything's a cliff around you, you know, just move through it. And fog doesn't freak me out, but I know that it's very uncomfortable to drive through for a lot of people.
It is disconcerting. So I moved in the summer because I got a teaching job, and my mom and dad, you know, flew out with me and helped me find like an apartment. And we found an apartment, a car, insurance, and like Walmart furniture for my apartment in 3 days. And then on the fourth day we went to Disneyland, because of course we did. So like boom, 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 we got all this stuff done. And when we were here, we saw these stop signs with, you know, lights on top of them. And we were like, silly Californians, don't they know how to stop at a stop sign? You know, we were so judgy. We had no idea. And then the other thing I noticed was everybody here has a white car. And I was like, that's not fun. Why does everybody have a white car? So of course, when I bought my car, I didn't know why I got such a great deal on this like electric blue color, you know, that showed every speck of dust the first week that I had it. And so the first time that we had fog, really, I called my parents and I was like, so you remember those lights that we couldn't figure out on top of the stop signs, and we thought that Californians were so silly? Now I know.
Now you know that there's an actual reason for it.
Maybe a reason for it. It's not just that they want to blow through every stop sign. Although, but I digress.
That's funny. Well, let me switch gears here. So talking about the One Book Project, which is one of the main reasons we have you here today. The One Book Project has started in September, and that's going all the way through about mid-November. So we're still in the midst and the throes of the One Book Project, which we have talked a little bit about on the show before, but basically it is a community-wide read encouraging the community at all age levels across Kern County, so not just Bakersfield, but everywhere in Kern County, to read the same book and to take the themes from those book from that book and have a localized discussion about it and apply it to our lives here. And over the years, the program's almost 2 decades old at this point now, and the library is one of the lead partners along with Cal State Bakersfield. There is a lot of partnership levels also with Bakersfield College and Kern High School District and community organizations as well. And the One Book Project, as time has gone on, has extended to include companion titles. And we encourage everybody to get involved with the One Book Project and join the discussion and to attend events. No matter what their reading interests are, because we know that not everybody wants to read a nonfiction book. Sometimes for some people, that's their cup of tea. And so these companion titles allow all ages and all interests to get involved. And so along with that, we encourage people to, even though we've selected certain titles, there's also titles that people can get involved with the subject matter, even if it's not on the primary list. And so this year we are celebrating the centennial celebration of the 19th Amendment, and that is women's right to vote in this country. And so along with that, we're celebrating fantastic women, trailblazing women, women in STEM careers. So a whole range of basically female celebration, which is really exciting. And then it's also kind of exciting that this whole celebration, the 19th Amendment, occurs during an election year. So there's just a lot of tie-ins this year with the One Book Project. And that is why we have Allison here today, is because her book is a perfect tie-in with the One Book Project. It is about a strong woman who broke a whole bunch of records. And I'm going to let you explain this, Allison, because I know you're going to do better than I can. So I'll let you jump in here.
Okay. Thanks, Jasmine. So I get to come at the One Book Project with both sort of areas of my life, which is kind of cool. So by day, I always say I'm a teacher. And by night and weekend, I am a writer. And I'm a teacher of high school, but a writer of, you know, elementary text, picture books, primarily nonfiction. So the title that I'm so excited that, you know, you all have chosen was Unbeatable Betty, which just came out for me this summer with HarperCollins. And I have to tell you before I start talking about the book that when I moved here so many years ago, and I heard about the One Book Project as a teacher and just as an aspiring writer, it was like a bucket list dream of mine. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if the city that I lived in someday chose something that I wrote? So I just feel so honored. And this is like really one of those, oh my gosh, can you believe my book is on that list? So I have to thank you. And I have to say how honored I feel. And this is like check bucket list, like awesome. I can't believe that it happened. I mean, I dreamed of it and here it is. But Unbeatable Betty tells the story of Betty Robinson, who was the first woman to win Olympic gold for track and field in the modern Olympics. Before 1928, they thought women were too weak to run. They would not let them compete. They had their own like women's Olympics. And they did let women compete in certain sports. But they were kind of the pretty sports, right? The ones that you weren't getting super sweaty, running down a track. They were the things that they thought women looked appealing while doing, which makes us ladies all like roll our eyes and feel a little angry. And so Betty Robinson was a 16-year-old student, much like my own, which I think is why part of the reason I clung to her story. She had to catch a train, just catching a train on foot. And it happened that one of her teachers, who was also the boys' track and field coach, was on that train. And he saw her do that. And he was like, do you run? And she thought, what are you talking about? Do I run? I mean, I just ran to catch a train, but she had never been on a track team before. Girls weren't supposed to run in 1928. And he timed her in the hallway of school, not wearing real track shoes, by the way. And she set an indoor record. He said, can you do that again? And she did it again. And he knew this girl is something. This girl is something special. So in just a few months, he had her join the boys team and she ran soon. She was running past them. And he trained her and helped her go to some local events around Chicago to qualify for the Olympics. And she did qualify to go to Amsterdam in 1928. And so I just want to show you some of my illustrator, Joni Stone's beautiful illustrations. Like, don't you love that? Mm-hmm. So
her illustrations were gorgeous. Me and Farah were commenting on the illustrations.
Yeah. I mean, I struck it so lucky. And this is Betty running to catch her train. And there she shows Mr. Price watching her. And then you get his perspective, you know, of her and her ability to run and catch that train. So she ran. And then I have to show you, this is my favorite illustration. I love her little cloche hat and the picture. And I'm going to show you a picture of real Betty from the end of the book. But Joni saw some reference photos of Elizabeth Betty Robinson, and she drew this, her waiting to go to Amsterdam. And I have to show you, this was given to us by Betty Robinson's family, the Robinson-Schwartz family, and that's real Betty in her adorable hat. And I just thought, you know, Joni was able to capture who she was. I always tell students, like when I share this book with them, that I think it's really important to be the first woman to do something or the first anybody to do something. Mm-hmm. But her story is more than just I was the first to do something. Mm-hmm. Betty went, she got that gold. She beat the favorite to get the gold. So that was amazing in and of itself. She came back to the United States. I'll show you another, because I love this. And I have to brag about Joni and her artwork. But there she is, coming back to her ticker tape parades. And what I love here is that Joni put her records that she started setting on the flag. So she becomes this phenom who's setting records in the United States. And she is heavily favored. She's going to go back to, this time Los Angeles was where the next Olympics was, and she was going to win gold again. And as she was training, it was really, really hot. She decided to go up into a biplane with her cousin. And, you know, I always tell my students that who we are and our identity is not just forged in the good times, but you have to forge in fire, right? And so the person that Betty Robinson was really emerges for me, not at that first Olympics, but afterward. She was in that biplane accident. She was taken to the Undertaker because they thought that she was dead. He found a pulse and said, get her to the hospital. She goes to the hospital. And the doctors, when she woke up from her coma, said, forget running. You're never going to walk again. And she did not listen. She did not say, okay, I'm going to listen to what you say, and I'm not going to run, and I'm not going to walk. In fact, and I put a real line that she said directly in the book, because I thought it was so important for students. When reporters asked her about whether she was going to run again, she says specifically, of course I am going to run again. It's not just like, I think so, or yeah, or maybe. It's of course I am. And the most moving, I think, illustration that Joni did for me is showing this progression. I love this spread of her really training herself. And she did. She had a family member who helped her, but she trained herself not just to stand or to walk or to run, but to run at Olympic speed. And they said it sounded like firecrackers exploding in her leg as she ran, because she had this rod down her leg. Can you imagine that? I mean, the toughness inside, you know, and out, like physical and mental toughness that it would take to do that. When I found her story, I was watching it with my little daughter, who was, you know, about 4 at the time. We saw it on a program on television called Mysteries at the Museum, because we always like to watch it to see which museums we want to go to. And they showed Betty's track shoes, and they looked so uncomfortable. I thought, how could anybody run in those? But then when I heard her story and what it took for her to kind of keep working and come back and not listen to what other people said or thought that she could or shouldn't do, time and time again, you know, she came back. And I just thought, this is a story for my daughter and for everybody's daughter. And maybe even more so, this is a story for my son and for everyone else's son. It's important for boys and girls to know that your gender, your ethnicity, your orientation, whatever it is, that has no bearing on what you can do and what you can become. And, you know, Betty's story speaks to that. She's a hero of mine. She went on to compete at the next Olympics, and this time she went on to compete as part of a relay team. So there's so many layers to the story, I think, for kids and for parents to talk about. She went from being, you know, I'm it and I'm the golden girl, to having to share that stage and that track with other women. And she went to Hitler's Germany, by the way, talk about dramatic settings. She went to Hitler's Germany to run in that relay race. And I don't want to give away the ending, but I think that kids and parents, when they read this, they're going to walk away hopefully as inspired as I am with Betty's story. So that's Betty. That's Betty to me. And I think that
you, in the process, became very connected to it. Mm-hmm. It's so funny. I don't want to say character, because she's not a character. She's a real person. Mm-hmm. So you became very connected to her history. You pointed out one of my favorite illustrations of the book, mm-hmm. because I felt in general that your illustrator happened to very much, you know, obviously it was her style, but the illustrator was able to capture what Betty really looked like, which I thought was really impressive. And I really liked that specific one you said was your favorite too, where she goes from, you know, being in the wheelchair to running, that was such a transformation. I even actually, after reading the book, looked up some footage of her running particularly the one that she won her first medal from. And I was really impressed. It was really cool to watch. I didn't expect to actually see footage.
Yeah, and it's so fun to kind of fall down that rabbit hole and start Googling her and watching those races. And, you know, I am always just astonished to watch women like her and then also people like Jesse Owens and think this was not their only job. And not to take anything, of course, away from our professional athletes now, but they train and they train all year and every year until the next Olympics. And that's like their career and their job. She was a high school kid. You know, she had a few months to get ready for that first Olympics. That's amazing. This was something that she did aside from everything else. And it wasn't the only thing that she did. And they also did not have the training, the equipment, and the rehab that our athletes do today. So thinking about that, you know, I mean, she did her own physical therapy. That's incredible to me. And you're right. I am really passionate about Betty's story. And of course I didn't get to meet her, unfortunately, but the coolest thing happened to me when the deal was announced with Harper through Publishers Weekly. I got an email through my author website, and it was a woman who said, "I think you wrote a book about my grandma." And that can go one of two ways usually, right? That can be either like, uh-oh, do you hate me? Uh-oh, are you like scared or upset that I wrote this book? But for me, I'm just so very grateful and so very lucky that it went the opposite way and beyond what I could have ever imagined. So her granddaughter, Brooke, is a teacher also. She's a runner also, like Betty. Now, you know, in her life, she wasn't a runner, she says, in high school or anything like that. But she's taken it on as a kind of, you know, maybe an homage to her grandmother, but also her own activity. And she and I became great friends. We like text and call each other. And it's become an amazing friendship for me. And so I, of course, having never met her grandmother, I ask her weird questions like, what kind of cookies did Betty like? Or, you know, what's her favorite cupcake? You know, just bizarre things that I kind of think of because the book is written and it's already out, but I feel that I really need to know Betty. And I feel that if I'm talking to, you know, students about Betty or other readers, I want to know as much as I can to tell them who she was. And it's so cool because we read about these people who are amazing and inspirational and they're like larger than life. And then you meet their family and you remember they were a real person. You know, she made cookies with her granddaughter. Like she had a real life that was outside of sports. And I love Brooke shares, you know, we've talked to other people together. And Brooke always shares that she kept her medals in a candy box. Like she did not display them. She was not into, look at me, this is what I did. And it could be a thing of her generation. We've talked about that a little bit, but she just wasn't that person. If you didn't know that she was an Olympic gold medalist, that wasn't something that she would just tell anybody. And so I always tease Brooke, and I've said before, like, if I had a gold medal, I'd be wearing it to Target. Like, I'd be pumping gas in my gold medal, and I'd be going, like, look what I did. But her grandmother wasn't that way, and I think that, you know, her actions spoke louder than any medal ever could, and that's the beauty of Betty's story.
Yeah, I think that's such a wonderful, beautiful connection to have, because it really does allow you, you know, through osmosis to like connect with this person that you ended up really, you know, becoming so interested in learning about and then writing about. That's such a cool opportunity and such an amazing, unique experience. I was actually reading that Betty remains the youngest woman to win a gold medal. Yes. Yeah. I was really surprised to realize she still held that record.
And it was amazing. Some of her other records, you know, have changed and fallen. And also they measured distance differently then than they do now. So it's kind of hard to calibrate. But Brooke and I collaborated this summer on a book guide for teachers. So any teachers out there, you know, go to my website and it's listed there. It's AllisonKrotzerKimmel.com. But there's a totally free, you know, teacher guide for you to use with your students. And when Brooke and I were collaborating, we do a math bit in there where you can see how fast she was compared to animals. And it stuck with me that, spoiler alert for the kids out there who might be doing this project with their teacher, she was like, her reaction time was faster than a house cat. And that to me is kind of amazing. I mean, you know, cats can get up and move, and she was faster than that. And that really puts it into perspective too. And we're talking about a woman who's running in the 20s and the 30s and still that, you know, that fast. And so it's been a great blessing and privilege in my life to know Brooke and to know her mom, Jane, because Betty's daughter, Jane, has become a friend too. And so, to be able to talk to them and to know them. And actually, if you go to my website and you click on that book guide, there are interviews that I did with Jane and with Brooke to ask her all of those like weird questions that just still are on my mind as a writer and a big fan of Betty's. So students, teachers, anybody can go there and see and kind of learn a little bit more about her.
You mentioned being faster than a house cat. I make jokes all the time that I have terrible reaction time. Like my reaction time is super slow. And this is a running joke in my family about how slow my reaction time is. So I'll be like speaking to my husband and I don't even respond to him. And then like a minute later, I'll go, "You said something." And literally I just didn't even process it. But I always remember I did a experiment in high school and it's so funny. You know how certain characteristics of oneself, even though not necessarily the most positive or something to be proud of, become a running joke. But we did an experiment about reaction time. And, you know, I did all the calculations. This was physics class. I did all the calculations. And my number was like a double digit. And like nobody else looked this way. And so I'm like, I must be doing this math wrong. It wasn't like my strong suit, right? So I go up to the teacher and I go, "Is this right?" And then I showed him all the calculations. He goes, "Yes. You just have a slow reaction time if this data is correct." And ever since I've been like, not only do I have a slow reaction time, but I proved it. So
it just means that you're maybe a deep thinker. Think about that. You're just a deep thinker.
Definitely. So it's funny to hear that because I'm like, dang, that's really fast.
That's really fast. Yeah.
That's totally really fast. Yeah. So you were saying you listen, you were watching a show. I've never heard of that show, by the way, that museum one you talked about.
It's on, I think it's on the Travel Channel. It's called Mysteries at the Museum. And a guy named Don Wildman is the narrator of the show. And they show clips from different places all around the United States and then in Europe and all over. And they're just different museums you can go to. And they'll start it with like an artifact. Uh-huh. And then say, oh, you can go see like this hatchet at the Lizzie Borden house or whatever, you know, wherever. And some of them are, you know, like that, like big things that you've heard of before. And then others will be little small snippets in history. And that's what intrigues me as a writer. I love to find that unsung hero or heroine in history who didn't get their due, didn't get their day. And Betty certainly fits that. I mean, she is not only the first, but I don't know any other Olympian who came back from the dead to go back to the Olympics. Like, that's amazing. And why haven't we heard of her? And it became my mission, hearing that on there, to profile her and to get her story out there, because how did she get missed? You know, how did she get skipped? And we need to know her story, not just because that big headline, like came back from the dead, but it's about so much more than that. It's really about that resilience and that fortitude and that confidence in your mind and your identity. I know who I am. And no matter what you say or what you think, that's not going to be what it is for me. I'm going to rise above that challenge. And that's not going to be my fate. I'm not going to be in a wheelchair, or I'm not going to, you know, not be able to ever run again. I'm going to do it. And that's, you know, kind of just her. And from everything that Brooke and Jane have shared with me, you know, she was a really special person and, just kind of did it, you know, and a competitive person. And we all have to compete a little bit to get the things we want in life, no matter whether we're talking about a gold medal or we're talking about getting a great grade or we're talking about finishing a degree or writing and publishing a book. I mean, whatever it is, you have to have a little bit of that competitive nature to go, yeah, not only do I know I can do this, but I will do this. So,
yeah, I think, I always say mind power has a lot of control. You know, you're able, determination, convincing yourself of the impossible often leads to the possible, obviously within reason. But it is a really big deal to have gone through such an accident, to be told that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily walk even, to let alone then compete in the Olympics again. And I can't even imagine that. I'm not a sports person, so I literally can't imagine it. But that is a big hump to overcome. And it is something to be celebrated, especially considering that she still holds some of these records. And I definitely read up on her after I read your book, just because I'd never heard of her. I didn't know anything about her, frankly, before I had read your book. And it was really enjoyable to learn about somebody that had made such an impact on that sports area, and just to know about her. And I was definitely blown away. I was blown away by her story too. So I can see why you connected with it so much.
Well, and I think too, to like kind of promote, because nonfiction picture books are my heart as a writer, and they allow people to get a snippet of history that they might not have known. And like you did, oh, this is interesting. This person is interesting. I'm going to go find out a little bit more about them. And so they allow us, in a few pages, and like 32 or 40 pages, to tell you about something that you may not have heard, and, expose that hidden history. And I think that that's kind of the power of books like these. I was telling you ladies before this all started, I shared a new picture book with my daughter and my son. And my daughter, it was a nonfiction. And my daughter said, did this really happen to these people? And the answer was yes. And it's important for you to know that. And it's important for you to see that. And, you know, of course, the teacher part of me loves, Jasmine, that you went off and did more research, because that's exactly what I wanted, you know? And I told Brooke, this is my humble goal for the year. And I always set myself some really high goals. But I said, Brooke, by the end of this school year, every student in grades like 1 through 3 or K through 3 is going to know your grandmother's name. Like, that's my goal. So, you know, whether they read the book or not, I want them to see it and say, who is Betty Robinson, and go find out about her.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think that people will be reading your book quite a bit right now with the Olympics were supposed to obviously happen this year, and I believe have been postponed, if I remember correctly. I think that there's still, that's still worth celebrating, because it is really important right now for us to do things that remind us of what's normal, and to remind us that the situation we're technically in 2020 is very temporary, and to celebrate things like, you know, the Olympics and these wonderful things that have happened, and just kind of, and I think that reading is a wonderful thing for families to do together during this time. So like, that's a perfect example right now. So.
And yeah, exactly. And I think too, part of the message, and I was so grateful to HarperCollins that they said, yes, we're still going to release this, though the Olympics was postponed, because, you know, my editor, Clarissa, who's amazing, she said, this book is about so much more than the Olympics. And I was like, it is, my God, you see it just the same way that I do. It really is. And I want kids who read this to know that times are tough right now. And, you know, we could have relatives who are sick and worse. And we could have financial situations that look really hard in our families. But I want them to see from Betty's example that this too shall pass, and that other people have been able to overcome things that they thought at the moment, or other people thought at the moment, were going to be too tough for them to get through, and they did. So, you know, the message is, if Betty can do it, you can do it too.
I believe, and that is a wonderful message, I believe that you have some recommendations as well about other impactful women.
So Betty goes along with, and sorry, I took the cover off because this is my teacher part. See, these are all the things I want to do with my students with Broadband. So this is Broadband, that we're going to talk about for the One Book Project. And so I'm super lucky again to be on a panel with women that I admire as writers. And one of those women is my friend and local author, Rebecca Langston George. And so her book about Malala is called For the Right to Learn. And she is on the panel with me. And this is beautifully written, and of course about another woman who inspires, a young woman who inspires. I also wanted to say, this is, so kind of, I think of it as a companion piece. So moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas, let your kiddos read Unbeatable Betty, read it with them. And then go get Fast Girls. And so Fast Girls is historical fiction. It's by Elise Hooper. And it tells the story. It talks about Betty Robinson and all of those amazing women, women athletes who were kind of discounted. But if you're a fan of historical fiction, Fast Girls is going to really speak to you. And Elise and I have talked before. And I said, you know, it's kind of like a mother-daughter, father, son, grandparent, child book club pick. You know, the adults in the room can read Fast Girls, and then the kids can read Unbeatable Betty, and they can still have a conversation about, you know, what's going on and themes that are present in both of the books. And another one that just came out and is another dear writing friend of mine, Alexis O'Neill. This is Jacob Reese's Camera. And it tells the story of Jacob Reese, who brings, it says, light to the tenement children. And so he is, this is the book I was saying that my daughter said, did that really happen? And I said, yes, it did. And so he brought light with his photography to the living conditions of folks that were, people were not aware of or didn't understand. And Alexis is a great children's book writer and a great writer. Recently, she's done fiction, but she also has done a lot of nonfiction. And so this book just came out this summer also, and I would highly recommend it because, again, telling the story of unsung heroes and heroines. And then a kind of a popular pick, I don't know how many of you out there have read The One and Only Ivan, but I like to, my kids are 12 and almost 10, and I still like to read to them at bedtime. I still like to have that moment and story, and it doesn't always happen because now we're back in school and we have homework and we have stuff to do, and I have stuff to grade, but I do like to, especially on kind of the weekends or a Friday night or whatever, sit down with them and pick something that we can read together. And sometimes it's a picture book like Jacob Reese's Camera that I used, and then sometimes it'll be a longer piece. And so we loved The One and Only Ivan quite a few years ago when they were younger, and then when this came out this year, I had to get a copy. So we're reading that together. It's kind of our, we slowly read a few pages every night, but it's wonderful. And it was a great companion piece because we read Ivan and then we watched the movie when it came to like Disney Plus this summer. And now we're reading Bob's perspective on what happened. So those are kind of the kid picks. And then as an adult reader, you know, I have like so many lives as a reader. So I read nonfiction to do research for my books and whatever's coming up that way. And then as a teacher, I read a lot of literary things. So I am rereading Great Expectations for about the, I don't know how many times, so many times, but I love Dickens, and that was kind of my jam when I was a student at Bucknell and at Oxford. So British Lit was my specialty. And I'm going to teach it again to my students this year. So I'm rereading it just to kind of get back into it. And so that's fun for me. But the other part of my reading life is kind of the fun sort of mystery suspense type stuff. And I know, Farah, I had shared with you one of Ruth Ware's books the last time I was on. And I said in that time, in that meeting, I said, oh, there's another one. I'm not sure what it's called, but it's coming out in the fall. Well, I found out what it was called and I bought it, and it's called One by One. So I got this at Russo's, you know, the week that it came out, I was so excited. And, last time I advertised, I love Ruth Ware because she is a British writer of suspense. And she reminds me so much of like P.D. James or Agatha Christie. And I think it's really great that she's in that tradition of a British suspense writer who happens to be a woman. And, she always usually sets her novels in some place in England or Great Britain, but this one happens not to be. So it's kind of a departure for her, but it's a fun read. And it's one of those that gives you a sneak peek without giving you a sneak peek. So I love that. And then the other one, I don't know if I talked about her the last time, but I like Megan Miranda also. And so The Last House Guest is the one that I am on right now, kind of reading. But She is, I love The Perfect Stranger. She's really known for All the Missing Girls. It kind of has like a Ferris wheel on it, if you've ever seen that book. But this one is quite good. And I think, I'm not sure, but I think she has another one that's new that's either just come out or is coming out. So those are on my desk right now.
Yeah, that's a lot of good reads. That's a lot of good, a lot of a variety, because, you know, I know often we get stuck in, like, I know I get stuck in the same reads because I'm like, this is what I enjoy reading. I am not changing it. By the way, I've never read Great Expectations either. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you guys have to come to my class. Like, read it and then, you know, yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah, I've seen obviously some adaptations and whatnot, and I have a lot of obvious respect for some of the most famous authors there's ever been, because like they pioneered so much of the stuff that ends up coming out today. So like obviously a lot of respect, but yeah, it's one of those books that, you know, you feel like you should have read. Like, that's how I feel about it. Like, I feel like I should have read it at some point, but it just hasn't happened yet. One day though, one day.
And I think it's like one of the more accessible novels that Dickens did. My favorite of his is actually Hard Times. But it's maybe not the same level of like, come and read me that Great Expectations would be. But it's so great. And it speaks, because I've taught it before at the high school level, and it really speaks to students at that level who do have plans for the future, and don't we all hope for an anonymous benefactor, which is what happens in the book. And so it has a strange mystery element too, and it has a great payoff. So read Great Expectations, and then I'll make you come to my class and we can do some literary analyses with our students.
That'd be fun, honestly. Have you been listening to anything or watching anything too?
So, you know, I was thinking about that. It's so funny because mostly, and if you know teachers in your life, give them grace right now. I have mostly been reading student papers and learning the life of distance learning and doing all that. So the funniest thing is at the end of my night, so I usually, you know, log on at like 7:30 or something like that in the morning. School starts at 8. I do the Zoom meetings till lunchtime at 1. And then I eat a quick lunch and then I come back and grade, or I create new curriculum, you know, like for 2 weeks from now or something like that. And so at the end of the night, and then I kind of like take a break, give my kids dinner, because usually they're standing at my office door like, did you forget that I exist, Mom? So then I go feed them and then I come back and work a little bit. At the end of every night, my new sort of mental sort of cool down after a day of work is watching repeats of Will and Grace. That's like, I found it on Logo and I was like, yes, this makes me happy. This takes me to a happy place. And then there's this other old show with Julia Louis-Dreyfus that I started rewatching, that was on when I first like was having babies, and it's called The New Adventures of Old Christine. Either of you seen that? And I was telling my husband the other night, because I remember loving that show and watching it the first time around, and like Clark Gregg is in it, who you recognize from, I think, the Avengers movies and stuff. And so there are people who are on it, like Wanda Sykes. You're like, oh, I know them from other stuff now. And obviously Julia Louis-Dreyfus from Seinfeld and Veep. But this is, it's really kind of funny and clever, and I think great writing. But the funniest part is, I know that I watched this as a young mother, but I think I was so sleep deprived with a baby who, honest to God, my son didn't sleep for a year. Like, my husband and I were zombies for the first year of that child's life. And then the first night that he slept, we like had his sister. And so it was like, we didn't sleep for 3 years or something. It was crazy. But I was watching these episodes and I'm like, it's all new to me again, because I think I was in such a fog at that moment in my life that I remembered liking the show. But it's not like Seinfeld where I'm like, oh yeah, this is that episode and I've seen it 15 times. And I, you know, it's like an old show that's brand new to me because I was in such a mom fog at that time in my life. So it's kind of weird. But it's fun. And of course I watch the news, but I try to turn it off. I've been trying to turn it off now, because it's just so much. So I watch a little bit of that, and then I make myself happy by watching The Old Adventures of New Christine or Will and Grace. Nothing that's current, nothing that's new.
Kind of funny because you mentioned, you know, you mentioned you're rewatching something, it's reruns, but my husband, who's also a teacher, like I mentioned, he is rewatching Grey's Anatomy. He just started rewatching it, and I was laughing at him. I'm like, okay, watch Grey's Anatomy then, which we kind of fell behind a couple seasons ago. I think we left off at like season 13 or something. So like I've watched, you know, a lot of Grey's Anatomy,
yeah.
But the first time we watched it was when I was pregnant.
So, there you go. So
getting, so it's kind of funny, those parallels, but yeah, I think light things are super essential right now. You know, nothing that drags you down emotionally too much. So.
There are. And truthfully, like, so my kids, you know, I said they're little, but they're not. And so our traditions every year, like I love holidays and I have so much fun decorating and we make certain, you know, baked goods and all that stuff. And we have traditions that we do at certain times of year. And it's really hard to be a parent right now and to keep some of those traditions. You know, my husband and I are like, okay, so no trick or treating this year. Like, what do we do? And so we're trying to think, you know, I said, well, maybe we'll just go buy a bunch of pumpkins and make our own like pumpkin something in the backyard, or just to do something for our kids so that it doesn't feel like they have to give up, because they're already giving up seeing their friends and they're already giving up you know, seeing their teacher in person, which I think is good because I want everybody to be safe. But I also know that it's hard to explain to a 12-year-old whose last Halloween it might truthfully be to trick or treat that you're not going to trick or treat this year. So we're doing a lot of like watching the same movies, you know, we're watching like the Shrek Halloween movie. We're watching this weekend. My daughter's already decided it's Nightmare Before Christmas weekend, or yeah, that we're going to watch that probably tonight. And she also wants to watch, I think, Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown. So we're trying to set this like schedule of stuff that we want to watch. And she also last weekend said, I'm almost 10, because she turns 10 in November. I'm almost 10 and I want to watch a more grown up scary movie. So last weekend, I don't know. I hope nobody out there judges me as a mom. Okay. But we let them watch The Sixth Sense.
Oh, so good.
So good. And I hadn't seen it since it came out. And I think I was in like high school maybe. And so it had been a long time since I watched it. And we looked it up on the Common Sense Media. You know, we kind of check stuff to make sure it's like appropriate. And there were a few things we were like, you know. But there wasn't anything so bad. But then I forgot how... what a great job the makeup artists on that movie did with, you know, some of the people who were dead. And like, there were some jumps for me, you know, and I'm like thinking, my kids aren't going to sleep for, you know, talk about them not sleeping as 1-year-olds. Now they're going to like not sleep as 12 and 9-year-olds, but they did okay. But that was the thing that I watched last weekend. So we're going to return to that comfy, cozy place this weekend of Nightmare Before Christmas and Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown. I don't know if we're ready for that big grown-up shift.
I actually was kind of an odd duckling. I only became scared of scary movies as I got older. I actually was super into them when I was young. So I watched everything I could watch when I was like little. I loved scary movies. If, you know, if people were getting, you know, getting chased after and murdered, I was happy. Like I was like that type of kid. So it's, you know, like some of my favorite books when I was a kid was Goosebumps. So I loved it.
Did you love that Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series when you were a kid?
It's so sad. I never read it, but I know, I know Farrah, didn't you like those?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was like, Farrah liked them.
They're so good too. They're somewhere here. And I want to get up and grab, but they're on one of these bookshelves and I'm like, I can feel it somewhere very close, but it was something that my mom sent me my old version of them that were all kind of worn out. And then she bought my kids the, you know, new updated editions. But I like to do urban legends like as a teacher in my classroom, you know, to kind of talk about some of those character tropes and some of the things that are common in urban legends. But my kids like those. And I, as a kid, didn't like scary movies necessarily, but I loved those books. And the illustrator was amazing and gory. And it was like, I can still remember, Farrah, can you still remember that like picture with like the eyeball? You know, I was like.
Yeah, I think the girl with the spider coming out of her face, that one scared me a lot. And then like, I think I remember one that's just like this hairy creature.
Yeah, it was a pretty intense illustrator Well done. But moms and dads out there, maybe you just want to read the urban legend to the kid, but not let them see the picture. You know, I already traumatized my children with, you know, the Sixth Sense last weekend. So I think I'm good as far as like bad parenting for a while.
But that's good. That's such good storytelling. At least, you know, mm-hmm. like that's not, those are some of my favorites. The type of scary movies that are, they're thrillers. They're not mm-hmm. really made to simply scare you. They are
made not gory, you know, it's not just gore for the sake of gore. And I think you're right. I think that story, you know, and I tried to like, you know, be the teacher and whatever. And from a historical standpoint, like after the movie was over, we love going to IMDb and like looking up trivia on movies after we watch it. Mm-hmm. That's our thing. And so my husband and I were like, look, you know, doing the research. And then after it was over, we're telling the kids stuff. And I said, you can't appreciate how I think monumental that movie was now, because there have been a lot of similar tactics used since then. So, you know, my daughter, who's an avid reader, was sitting beside me watching it, and she knew the end before she's like, oh, well, clearly he, and I was like, don't tell your brother, you know? And so, but I think it was the experience of a reader and the experience of somebody who's seen that. And it was hard to explain to them that at that time, that was like super revolutionary. That was mm-hmm. everybody's going like, what? And I think about something like the Blair Witch Project. You remember that? And watching that in the theater and not knowing that it wasn't true or whatever. They had some great marketing and publicity for that movie, because they didn't really have marketing and publicity for that movie. They just showed you like, this thing happened and go see this movie. And I remember being so freaked out by that movie. And now I think kids would watch it and laugh. I think it would become a comedy or something, mm-hmm. you know, without that.
I feel like definitely, you know, you definitely form an appreciation for how that like helped with those genres. I was actually going to say they're adapting Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Oh,
and I saw cool. some clips, like a making of clips. And I was like, I recognize the illustrations, you know, I recognize the illustrations, even though I haven't read the book. And it was creepy to see.
Yeah,
those.
There's one movie that's already out.
Is there?
And so not child friendly, maybe. Though they were supposed to be children's books.
Yeah, I would probably wouldn't say, I don't know. I could look it up and see what the rating is. But
all I know is the screenshots I saw, those costumes freaked me out.
Yeah.
And I was like, no.
Yeah, I think we're good with Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown. Maybe that's where we're staying.
It came out in 2019 and it is PG-13. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
So it already came out. Okay. Yeah. Maybe I just didn't hear as much fanfare because of 2020.
Yeah, like everything's kind of been so weird and sort of shut down. So, yeah.
These pictures look pretty scary.
It looked terrifying. I was like, oh, I don't want anything to do with this. I'm telling you, I'm a scaredy cat now. Like,
the Goosebumps movie that they made a long time ago is kind of silly, right? It's not so much scary. Yeah.
The Goosebumps movie is fantastic. It's totally kid appropriate. It's,
And I don't know. R.L. Stine makes an appearance, right? Isn't he in it?
Who?
Author R.L. Stine. I think he was in it.
I think he does make a cameo. I want to say he does. I don't remember. Yeah. I remember thinking when I saw the Goosebumps movie, like I enjoyed it. It was definitely like a kid's movie. It was a lot of fun. I thought it was a little bit of a shame as, you know, like a major fan, because the actual books were actually scary and movie is not, you know.
It felt tongue-in-cheek, because I think my kids watched it last year, and even his, you know, cameo felt was kind of like a tongue-in-cheek type of a deal. But
he was
it would be hard to bring Slappy to life and not have it be like super
terrifying,
right? For
I used to speaking of him, I remember at the Beale Memorial Library when I was a kid, I remember going and grabbing do you remember that TV show, the Goosebumps TV show?
Yes.
That was around, and it had adapted that, because that Slappy's one of the first books.
Right. Yeah.
So I remember grabbing that video, and there used to be those old TV contraptions, and you could sit down and put the VHS in, and I actually watched that in the Beale Memorial Library, and really glad I watched it during the daytime, because I was young when I
I was going to say, it wasn't like late at night and you weren't the only kid left in the place or anything.
No, it was, well, because it was AV section, so it wasn't like the kid section in the first place, and spent a lot of time at the library as a kid. So I remember very specifically, it's like one of my earliest memories of Beale Memorial Library was watching that Goosebumps adaptation in the 80s.
And yet you still wanted to work there.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, I was really into scary movies.
That shows that you have the fortitude of Betty Robinson.
Maybe then. Now I'm terrified of everything. do you want to share, Farrah, what you're reading and watching, or do you want me to share?
You can go ahead. Okay. My list is really short today.
Oh, mine is too. I mean, it's not the shortest, but it's not very long. See, I have to give you 1 second. Okay. No, that's notes. Oh, where's my list? Oh, no. List. There you are, list. Okay. What I read this week, I read Unbeatable Betty. That was the first book I read this week. I finished a book this week. That was exciting. I finished a larger book this week. I finished that Scythe book that I was reading last week.
Oh, I have a copy of that and I haven't read it yet. Was it amazing?
It was pretty good. I wouldn't say it was my favorite YA novel, but it had some really fun twists and turns at the end. And I am excited about the fact that it's a trilogy. I want to see where they're going to go with the other two books, which it's The Toll is one of them. And I can't remember what the other one's called, but it looks like it'll be interesting. I'm glad to finally have finished it. I was telling Farrah last week that like I've been wanting to read this book for months. And I finally got an ebook copy of it. And I was like, I have to read it before it returns. Like, I can't let this one go. I need to finish it. So I was really proud of myself for actually finishing it in a very short time period. It feels like it would be a fun book to see adapted. I would love to see it adapted. Just because, just this whole interesting futuristic, like, utopia, dystopia type of feeling of it was really fun. Because it's like, everything's perfect in this world. But then you have, like, you know, nobody has any purpose either. So it would be interesting. So I finished that book this week and I actually was physically reading that one. Well, I read the ebook. I am listening to several books. I'm listening to The Lesson by Cadwell Turnbull. I just started it. It's got a really interesting premise. It's about this place where aliens end up touching down and they end up like commingling, and it's in the Virgin Islands. And they're like commingling with them, but they're also very, the aliens are very authoritative. And like, if they feel like something's done wrong, they lash out very strongly. And so I think they end up hurting somebody. At least that was what the premise had said. And so it's really about those interactions with this alien species. And I was just really interested in it. It had a beautiful cover with like a seashell in the middle and these like tendrils around it. It's really pretty, which I'll make sure it's on this video so you can see it. But The Lesson, it was interesting so far. I don't have too much of an opinion because I'm still like in the early moments of the book, but I feel like I'm going to enjoy it. I started the book Start With Why by Simon Sinek, which he does a really famous TED talk about how leaders should ask the question why and how to get people to like basically, you know, to lead people essentially. I just started it, so I don't have any opinion yet on it. But that one's actually in our Hoopla collection, and so I figured I'd try it out. It's on a lot of top like leadership reads. And then I'm also listening to, oh, I have to pull up the full title of this one. This one's got a great title. It's called No Rules, Rules. It's No Rules, Rules. Netflix and the Culture of Reinvention. So it's about Netflix's ideas when it comes to like being a successful company. It's an ARC, so an advanced reader's copy. So it's not out fully yet. But one of the things that's really interesting about it is that it's written by both Reed Hastings, the founder and CEO, along with this other woman who is an expert in organizational management. And so a lot of the policies at Netflix are apparently really unique. Like, for instance, they don't give vacation days. They have a no vacation policy. And that doesn't mean that you can't take vacation. That means you don't have an allotted days. So if you're excelling and you're doing all of your work, you can take as many days as you want to, pretty much, which is an interesting concept and goes obviously very against like traditional thought process. Mm-hmm. So he talks about, like, the chapter will talk about how he was a part of another company before he had founded another one that ended up going under, and talked about like their more traditional viewpoints of that original company, and then going into Netflix, and they talk about how they developed these policies and how at first they went one way, but then they kind of perfected it and why it works for them as a company. And then she comes in and talks about the traditional viewpoints, why this is traditionally not considered a good policy, and then why she suspects that it works for Netflix. And it's the comparison is super interesting, because there's like a, there's another one they talk about with purchasing. So originally with Netflix, their policy was, instead of having like an overwrought, really long purchasing policy, their policy would be spend your money as if it was your own. And this policy ended up backfiring, because people spent the money like it was their own, obviously that did not work. So then they changed it as to spend Netflix's money in a way that is in the best interest for the company. So that's literally their one-liner on their purchasing policy. And I guess what they do is they audit about 10% of their employees' purchases every single year. So there's a guaranteed amount that's going to be audited. And if you can't immediately explain what your purchase is for and why it benefits the company, you'll be fired on the spot. So yeah, so like there's an incentive to follow the rule, but what they do is they focus on giving employees a lot of freedom and to excel and use their talent and their discretion wisely. And it's just really interesting what they're thought process was on some of this stuff. And so I'm like halfway through that book. I listened to like half of it in a day. It was so interesting. So I can't wait till that actually comes out as a copy, because I feel like it's going to definitely be one of those books that makes a big impact on organizational management. So
what was the title of that one again?
I had two questions.
What was the title? Sorry.
No Rules Rules, Netflix and the Culture of Reinvention. Mm-hmm. I'm reading it on the Volumes app, Farah. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I definitely, you know, when you get those types of nonfiction books that you're like, I could really apply this. I was like, I could apply some of these principles. I feel like this is something to really think about in the workplace. So I'm really enjoying that one. So that's everything I'm listening to. Watching, I do agree. I definitely took this week to sit in a very comfortable place with what I was watching. I watched the Masked Singer premiere for season 4. I love the Masked Singer. It is one of the only shows I will watch every single week it comes out. And it is one of the only shows I'll actually switch from like my like streaming services to cable to watch live. So I go out of extra effort to watch The Masked Singer every week, and the premiere came out and I was super excited, and their costumes this week were amazing, super amazing. And apparently they won an Emmy for their costumes, which I thought was really interesting and surprising, because those types of competition shows do not normally result in award-winning elements. So, watch that. I will continue to watch that every single week. And then the other thing I have been watching is Interior Design Masters. And it is a British show, a British competition show on Netflix that is, I mean, it's exactly what it sounds like. They're competing to be the best interior designer. And it's really fun. I've been really enjoying it. I only have like a couple episodes left, so I'm about to finish that show. Which is always a depressing feeling when you really like something, because you're like, yay, I know what happened, but no, it's over. So I'd highly recommend that one. If people like design, I'm really into like interior design, and I like a lot of those creative competition shows. So I used to obsessively watch Face Off on Sci-Fi. So I'm really enjoying it, and I'd highly recommend it. So that's my list.
Mine's like super short this week. As far as reading goes, okay, so I read something very heavy last week, if you guys remember. We are not free. I still cannot stop thinking about it. It is that good. I will tell you guys, and I've been telling everybody, that that is probably my top right now for 2020.
Wow.
Top book for 2020.
That is high.
You know it's good when it's still with you.
Yeah. So I thought, okay, so after I read that one, I was like, okay, I just need to read something like a little more fun. So I picked up a graphic novel, called All My Friends Are Ghosts.
Ooh.
Oh, perfect.
Super cute. I kind of wanted more from the story, but, I think kids will really like it. I think kids will really like it. So that was All My Friends Are Ghosts. Then all of my holds started coming in on Libby altogether, and so I read Punching the Air. The cover is super powerful. It is, I'm probably going to mess this up, but it's by Ibi Zoboy and Yusuf Salam. It's super heavy again. Like, it was good. I just finished it. I probably think maybe yesterday, maybe the day before. I did the audiobook. It's not very long. It was super heavy again. It is about, a boy who gets incarcerated, for a fight, and, mostly because he was African American is what happened. And in the story, you kind of find out, so the story starts off when he's like in the courtroom, and you find out, you don't really find out, because the way that it goes is that the guy that he got into a fight with apparently is so beat up that he's in a coma. And so the main guy, his name is Amal, which means hope in Arabic, is, sitting in a courtroom, and his family's all in the back, and they are going over all the evidence and the details and stuff, to find out if he's guilty or not. And he ends up going, being sent to juvie, and, you kind of go through him throughout like the whole process and stuff. It's not a very long book. It's only 4 hours long if you listen to the audio. You kind of go through his mind and what he sees. And he's a creative. He loves poetry, art, and all this stuff. And you get to see some other people that he's with in this juvenile detention center and how they get treated. And the end, you still don't really find out what happens. There's really no spoilers to give away. Basically, like, his mom calls him one day and is like, hey, this kid is out of a coma. And that's pretty much it.
That's it. It's one of those.
So he, they do have some more stuff that goes on after that, but like, it's a very thinking book, and I didn't mean for it to be so heavy again, but you know, it's like all these are coming in at the same time, and I'm just like, so good.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know how I say, there's candy reads, which are your fun reads, and then you have the books that make you think, and I mean, they're awesome, but there's also a lot of, they give a part of you, and you have to, it stays with you,
Right. And then I finished a book too. So, I don't know if you guys remember, I had started a book called Sanctuary, where they talk about, about our possible future. It's like all holographic, but the first chapter had talked about how this girl had walked over the wall. She was she walked over a wall and had landmines, and she got pretty much blown up. And all these immigrants in the United States are, the president at that time was like, okay, we're really getting rid of all these immigrants and stuff like that. And so this girl, her name is Valentina, but she goes by Valley, or Val, and her mom and her dad came over from Colombia, and they had a brother who was born in the United States. So, each person in the United States has a chip inserted in their arm, which has all their personal information in it. And immigrants were able to get chips that are kind of like fake IDs, so like fake chips pretty much. And so the border, not the border patrol, but like kind of like their version of Homeland Security was going around scanning people's chips to make sure that they were authentic and stuff like that. So basically the family came over, lived in California, moved to Vermont and lived in Vermont. And the dad got sent to was deported back. And so now they're in Vermont and they're really cracking down. And so they decide to run to New York to get help from this lady. Eventually, the goal is to get to California, which California is becoming a sanctuary state. Mm-hmm. So all the immigrants are trying to go to California, and the president is building a wall around California and made it its own country.
Well,
that's yeah. Yeah. All the heavy stuff is coming in at the same time, and I can't handle it.
That's all very heavy. That's a lot of, like, you can tell that they're drawing inspiration on current events, which means that it hits, like, harder, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Something that happened 10 years ago, you're, like, reading about more, like, relevant stuff, so that's a lot.
Yeah, and it was so gut-wrenching. They end up, you know, trying to get to New York, and they get separated from their mom, who gets taken away, and now they have to, she's in high school, and her brother is probably, I would say, very, like, late elementary, maybe early middle school, so her and her brother have to kind of navigate their way to get from one place to the next, and they get to, New York. This lady helps them. She comes up with the money to get them, you know, like, transported. This person that's going to transport them ends up trying to get them trafficked. And then they end up to kind of close to the California border. And they meet up with some other people who are in this truck going with them, and she meets this guy, and you know, there's a little bit of kind of like a romance factor, but it's almost like it's there because they're trying to just like get through the situation together. And there is a mom with two young kids, and oh my god, her story just literally ate me alive. Like, mm-hmm. I literally just ate me alive. And yeah, it was good. I would probably say everybody should read both books. Are really, really good. On a lighter note, at my house, my daughter is finally getting into, she's always played around with like books and stuff, and like we always read to her and stuff, but she's bringing us books to read to her now. So we have read Pete the Cat, I Love My White Shoes, I don't know how many times a day, and Green Eggs and Ham, how many times a day. As far as watching stuff, okay, so personally, I'm still watching Resurrection Argorgul, that Turkish show that I've been telling everybody to watch. I'm still watching that. Very, very long. I mean, the show, the seasons are very long. I've talked about them before. So I'm watching that. My sister-in-law has been on an Indian movie kick right now, so she's watching, like, not old Indian movies, but old Indian movies that have come out like recently, like 2017, 2016 and stuff like that. And my husband is still watching Hannibal, and it's getting, I like walk by and it's like gross, and I'm like, ew, what are you watching? This is disgusting. So he's been watching Hannibal. But yeah, that's pretty much it, really. I'm like reading all the heavy hitters right now.
I'm glad your daughter gives you a break.
Yeah.
You can, like, read Pete the Cat or something.
Yeah, so we are reading Pete the Cat. So I'll read it to her in English, and then she'll go over and give it to my mother-in-law, who will read it, like, in Gujarati for her, which is really funny.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's really good.
Yeah, so she'll read it in Gujarati, and it's funny because, you know, obviously – it's like the translation is like way different. I'm like sitting there like laughing at it, but it's good that she's learning both. So
yeah, it's very bilingual reading to children is a really big deal. It's very, the benefits are astronomical. So that's really awesome. I like that she's doing that. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm. That is actually the new book that I'm shopping as bilingual. So that's kind of interesting to hear.
Oh,
wow.
I wrote a story with my best friend and she wrote the Spanish and I wrote the text in English. So we'll see what happens. But yeah.
Well, good luck on that for sure.
Yeah. That's exciting. Yeah.
So I have to say, Farah, my son was go dog go.
Okay.
That every night forever and ever and ever. And then my daughter was Olivia. She loved original Olivia. Like we had the other ones, Olivia visits grandma or whatever, but it was like that first one. Mm-hmm. And I miss those days. It was like, we got to a point where it's like, oh, please, something other than Olivia or go dog go. But now I would give anything for them to come toddling over to me and say, read Olivia to me. Enjoy it. You'll get it memorized. And then,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pandora's was Don't Push the Button was one of her favorites. It's like about a monster that tells you not to push the button. It's one of those interactive books. And I think she still asks to read that book like 2 years later. Oh. So, and it's so much fun. And I also like when she picks up Green Eggs in the Hand is like my favorite Dr. Seuss book. As I've said before, he's my spirit Dr. Seuss animal. So, I just love reading it. I'm like, it's totally me.
It's so. A great book. Cause I always would get into reading, you know, time of year appropriate books for the kids. So it was like all the fall books are here on the shelf. And then we pull all those out, you know, at this time, and then all the winter and all the whatever. And my daughter still requested, though she's in fourth grade, she said, Mom, are we still going to read The Littlest Pumpkin this year?
Oh,
yes. You know that book? Mm-hmm. It's so good. If anybody doesn't know it, it's about the littlest pumpkin in the pumpkin patch who doesn't get picked until like the end. And it totally, it's like the Rudolph, I think, of kids' books about pumpkins. You know, it's like that odd man out kind of a story that it still really speaks to her. So still when we pick out pumpkins, she always goes to the pumpkin patch or wherever to get her pumpkin. And she picks the most pathetic looking one.
Oh.
Because she thinks of that book and she thinks like that nobody... If I don't buy this, no one else is going to buy this. And so I have to get this awful looking one that's already rotten or whatever. So.
You should. I think she'll really like that one you read, Jasmine, last week, the Christopher Pumpkin.
I have it right here. Christopher Pumpkin.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, it's really cute. Yeah, it's cute. It's basically about a pumpkin that likes pink and fun and not spider webs or scary things. Mm-hmm. And he's really cute. It's a cute little pumpkin. It was a fun book. It had some nice artwork, and my daughter found it to be a lot of fun. So
I'm going to have to get that one. I'm going to have to check that one out.
Totally. I think, Farah, that you wanted to talk about our the Book Cafe Book Club event.
Oh, library. Yeah. Okay. So as you guys know, we have these book cafes going on virtually now, and I wanted to give you guys a list of everything we'll be reading. So coming up, we have one coming up later today called When They Call You a Terrorist, and that's at 5:00. And then for our October ones, for our fiction one, we're reading The Turn of the Screw. Mm-hmm. For our cozy read, we're reading Bookshop of Yesterday. For our children's book club, we are reading The Graveyard Book. And for our new YA book cafe, we're reading Bewitch.
Oh.
It's like B, then an asterisk witch.
That's cool.
If anybody's interested in joining, all you have to do is either visit the library website to get the link to register or go on to the respective Facebook page.
Right.
And get involved. It's a lot of fun to get to read and discuss, and more than welcome. Everybody is invited, and I think that the awesome aspect of 2020 is the ability for us to be more participatory on things like this, because Zoom makes it so easy comparatively. And on that note, if anybody wants to share what they're reading with us, drop in the comments below.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let us know. I know people are sometimes quiet, and I want to know what people are reading. Make my list get even longer.
For sure.
Oh, and then also lunch. Lunch at the library. So super important. Lunch at the library. So typically lunch at the library is something we normally do in the summer, but because COVID has brought along a weird year, we actually are continuing lunch at the library, grab and go lunches at Beale Memorial Library Mondays through Fridays from 12 to 1 p.m. And so we are an open site, which means that you do not need to be signed up or any identification or anything like that. So show up with your kids, pick up, you know, take that lunch time frame that you have, if you have the ability to do so, drop by and pick up lunch, and you can pick up books and craft carry out kits at the same time. It's completely free for kids 2 to 18, and we are actually going to be doing that all the way through December this year. So we are offering lunch for many months. Join on in, and that's been kind of reintroduced, very little fanfare, so we want to see you there. We are very happy to serve you, so yeah.
And can I say, maybe if they come by with their kids to get lunch, I'll leave some of these with you, so I'll send those to you, Jasmine, and you could give them the Be Brave challenge. It's just a little thing that I made to go with Unbeatable Betty. So if you check out Unbeatable Betty and want to read it, or even if you don't, it's the idea is you're going to send some positive, you know, kind of love out into the world. And that's a picture of Betty Robinson for real there, and then the book. But on the back, it's a real old-fashioned snail mail postcard, and you just are to send it to have the kiddo in your life or you with them. Send it to somebody who's inspired them, like Betty has inspired me and inspires, hopefully, the readers of Unbeatable Betty. But you can send it to them and tell them how they inspired you. And I kind of got this idea because of COVID, like you're saying, everything has changed this year, and it's so strange. My two kids were sending pen pal letters to my grandparents, who I'm lucky enough to have three grandparents still living. So they were sending them to them in their assisted living home, and one of my grandmothers lives in her own home still. So they had pen pals. I was like, you know, there's this thing that we used to do, and it was called actually writing a letter, and you would like put a stamp on it and send it through the real mail, not texting someone or whatever. So they got to do that, and it made me think, you know, it made my grandparents so happy, and then they would send something to my kids, and my kids would rush to the mailbox and get it, and it made them so happy, and I thought, let's spread a little bit of that joy in the world. So anyway, I will bring some of these to the library so that folks who bring their kiddos to get lunch with you maybe can pick those up.
Perfect. That'd be perfect. It's wonderful. Yeah, and I do encourage people participate, and I think that letter writing right now is a good way to connect with particularly family members or people that you can't see, whether or not they'd be high risk or in the older age range or whatnot. So yeah, I think that's a wonderful idea. And so we want to see you guys at the library. Like, I think that's the big thing. I know that we are physically closed, our buildings are closed, but that does not mean that we are not still offering services. We are still offering all of our eBooks. We are still doing curbside services, carry out crafts, like we just said, lunch, the One Book Project. We still have programming going on. We are very active in the digital throes of Zoom and Facebook. So join us, and we hope to see you there. And we hope to see you next week at our show. I really enjoyed having everybody this week. So
thank you. This has been fun. I'm glad. Then I'm so honored again to be asked back. I really appreciate that.
You'll be back.
Oh yeah. Let's hope. Let's hope I get another one out. We can come back and or just right. Stuff that I'm reading.
Happy all right. Episode.
Yeah. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye.